This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn with me, Darshan Johan. In December, the Association of Family Support and Welfare, Selangor and KL, also known as Family Frontiers, filed a constitutional challenge with the High Court seeking a declaration that Malaysian women married to foreign spouses can automatically confer citizenship on their children who are born overseas. As it stands, Malaysia is one of 25 countries that deny women and men equal right to confer nationality on their children. Joining me on the line right now to share their insights and experiences are Chi Yok Ling and Roshina Rafiq of Family Frontiers. Roshina is also a Malaysian mother who's currently fighting an uphill battle to confer her citizenship on her children. Good to have you on the show, ladies, and Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm glad to
Happy New Year
on.
To you too.
Thank you. All right, Yok Ling, let's start with you. Can you help me make sense of the laws that are currently in place? I mean, we know that there is Article 14, which allows Malaysian fathers to confer their citizenship on their children, even if they are married to non-Malaysians and have kids abroad. But there's nothing in the Constitution that extends this same privilege to women, right?
Right. So basically, Article 14, as you had just mentioned, is the part of the Federal Constitution of Malaysia, which sets out how to get citizenship. There are two ways of getting citizenship in Malaysia. One, which is in Article 14, is what we call by operation of law, which means it's automatic, right? So Article 14 itself just describes a process with some conditions. Then you have automatic citizenship. It is actually in a schedule, like an annex, right, to the Constitution, which comes later. And the schedule then gives more details, and it is in the schedule that the word father is explicitly
right.
put in there. So the Article 14 itself just says that there is an operation by law citizenship, and then Article 15 is a citizenship by registration when you apply, right? And it's mm-hmm. a discretion of the government.
That's right.
So the limitation comes in the schedule, or like an annex to the where they mention the word father, and that's where the discrimination takes place.
So is there nothing that Malaysian mothers can do to confer their citizenship on their children who are born overseas?
At the moment, no. I mean, that's why if the Malaysian mother married to a non-Malaysian husband, if we give birth to our children in Malaysia, then that because they're born here in Malaysia, then they automatically will become Malaysian citizens, all right? But not if they're born overseas. But the reverse, if it's a Malaysian man married to a non-Malaysian woman, it doesn't matter where the child is born, it is an automatic citizenship that passes from the father to the child. And this is why for many Malaysian women, you know, those who can do it, try to come back to Malaysia if they are aware of this discrimination. If they're not, then it's always down the line. Then you suddenly wake up one day and discover your child has no citizenship rights. I mean, you try to come home.
That is just such a scary and frankly sad situation.
It's terribly
sad. Yeah, it is.
Absolutely. I mean, you said at the beginning, and this campaign is not new. You know, we have been fighting for this. Many generations of mothers and women and supporters and other fathers have also been fighting for this right, by having no changes to our constitution, etc. But, you know, the 25 countries you talked about, it's about maybe 2 weeks ago, Iran was one of the 25 countries, and they've changed their law. So now we are one of 24 countries in the world where we discriminate against women for citizenship rights.
Wow. Roshina, you're currently facing an uphill battle in this very area, right? Tell us about what exactly you're going through.
All right. Well, I'm living in Malaysia. I'm a Malaysian citizen, and I'm here with my two children. They were born in Australia.
Right.
We've been living here for some time now, and my children are on a student visa, which I have to renew yearly. That itself is an uphill battle for any parent to undergo. And, the challenges that we face, apart from just the student visa, is just the start, the tip of the iceberg. The issues that we have actually goes further than that. If you like a breakdown,
Yes, please.
All right. Well, where do I start? Let's just, I'll give you a bit of a breakdown.
Right.
In 2014, I applied for my children's citizenship. That's 8 years, slightly more than 8 years ago. And at then my twins were slightly above 1 year old. And having a complicated pregnancy, I couldn't come back to give birth, and hence the process began. So when we got back in 2014 and I had applied for their citizenship, I at that point in time did not realize that I was about to unravel upon a really long, tiresome journey. That application was rejected without a reason after 4 years. And I reapplied again in 2018, and I'm still waiting for the outcome of my second application. It has been slightly over 5 years now since we've left Australia, and it is my full intention to live in Malaysia forever.
Right.
My children are on a, like I said before, a yearly student visa. This requires a yearly renewal, and it's a tiring pursuit indeed. Sitting in the Bahagian visa, pass and permit at the immigration, it makes me feel sad to know as a citizen of this country, I am being made to wait for hours with the rest of the foreign workers just to renew my students, my kids' student visa. It is a struggle for any parent. Imagine those who have more than one children, more than two, you know, more than three. We have to do these yearly runs, you know, every year. Apart from that, there's a bit of a catch-22 situation here. In order to apply for my kids' student visa, I require a medical insurance. Mm-hmm. And to get a medical insurance, you need to have at least a 1 year visa on your passport. So you can see how it's a bit of a catch-22.
Yes.
It's back and fro, back and fro. The initial struggle to obtain the student visa was also a very long and stressful situation for me. Now we get to schools. Being foreign, my children are unable to secure a place in local schools nearby my home. I was told by the school that acceptance of students are based on a quota system, whereby local students are given the first preference. This leaves me with little choice but to enroll my children into a private or international school. They are studying at an international school at the moment. It is very costly.
Yeah.
And due to COVID, I don't even have the option to homeschool my children, because homeschooling is not recognized as a form of visa in this country. So I have to send my children to school and I have to pay for the fees. Now we come to healthcare. My children do not have access to local healthcare. I have to take up insurance for them. I'm paying 120 ringgit per month per child.
Wow. Some of us may not understand this. So perhaps you can explain to us why exactly it's important to you for you to confer citizenships on your children.
That's right. Okay, I will tell you. Coming back to Malaysia, it's very much a personal choice for me. This is the country that I was born in. This is the country that my parents are living in at the moment. And this is the country that I want to bring my children up for its cultural and Islamic values.
Right.
I'm a Muslim, and I believe the cultural exposure that the children will have. I want my children to know that they are Malaysians. I want them to grow up in this society like what I did. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's successful to me. Yep. Why it's important for my kids to have the citizenship in this country is that I intend to live here on a long-term basis. My parents are aged, they are old. I've returned for them. If my kids cannot stay in this country, first of all, that leaves me with little option but to, you know, go where my children are accepted.
That's
and
right.
That would mean leaving my aged parents behind, which is also not an option for me, you know. And also the other reason is that it gives me peace of mind to know that my children will be able to stay with me forever. For example, if anything happens to my marriage or to my husband, what would I do? How would I need access? I would need access to healthcare, to school, to bank accounts, without any of this costing me an arm and a leg. And I won't be able to have any access to any of this. It's in fact in very recent times, just last week, that we had a scare of my husband's health. It had deteriorated badly and we didn't think that he was going to make it. And this is a true real life story.
Right.
And the reality of it was too close for me to digest. And I had a bit of a meltdown due to it. I thought, what if this had really happened? On what basis does my children get to live in Malaysia with everything here in Malaysia to be follow the father's nationality? I mean, I also know of, apart from my case, I also know of other women who are sadly undergoing painful divorces. Simple processes like, you know, passport renewal or visa renewals are so stressful onto them. Just doing the visa run, sitting for hours in the immigration is tormenting enough. you know. So this is why it's important to mothers, you know, like me, or to other mothers, Malaysian mothers, that our children have, you know, a citizenship, so that we know that they can live with us here forever, and also have access to healthcare, to medical treatment, to schools, you know, like every other child out there.
Yeah, if I may add, I think one of the most painful things, and you will hear this story again and again from all the families, you know, because those of us, you know, and we're living in a world here, we have government after government. It doesn't matter which party they're from.
Exactly.
Right? Oh, we are, Malaysia is a globalized country. We are a trading nation. We want to have all kinds of intelligent people come to the... In fact, we have policies that look for talent to come back to Malaysia. Not just, you know, we have policies to try and bring back Malaysians who are talented and skilled. And we have policies to bring in expats to build this country, right? Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, you have a whole part of the population who are Malaysian citizens and women in transnational marriages, who, because this is a country we grew up in, we believe in it, we want to contribute to it, and our spouses want to be part of that contribution and are willing to come with us. And our children, many of, you know, for most of us, we actually do come back either professionally or even we have to deal with all these visa problems. We are applying for citizenship for our children as women so that we can be here. So most of these children actually have been growing up here. They know they're Malaysian in their heart and in their culture and in their connections with their family.
Right.
They sing the Negaraku, even they go to international schools. They love all the local food. And they cannot understand why they are not Malaysians, why they don't have a passport like their mother. My kids used to say that to me, why do I have to go to a different immigration line when we are traveling out, in and out of Malaysia? Am I a foreigner? But I'm not. I'm Malaysian, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that is... So I think apart from the sort of practical reasons... These kids have been growing up because you know they are Malaysians, so the law discriminates against them and then they are treated like foreigners. It's a rights issue, actually.
Yeah, my heart feels really heavy just listening to these stories. Roshina, can you perhaps break down some of the struggles your children have to go through? What kind of toll does it take on their psychological or mental health? Like, how do they process this information?
Well, my children, Dash, are actually just 8 years old, you know. Apart from the immigration queuing up, they don't understand that they will not be able to live in Malaysia forever. You know, they know my parents. They see their grandma and granddad every day, and they think that they're going to live here forever. In fact, it was just yesterday that my daughter said, "Mama, do I need to go overseas to do my studies? Can I do it here?" And I said, "Why?" She said, "Because I don't want to be separated from you and Baba. Because, you know, now Dad has been overseas for a year. He's stranded overseas because foreign spouses have only recently been allowed to come back. It's been a year since they've seen their father." And she said to me that I don't want to go overseas because I want to live here with you and Baba. And I also want to, you know, be here with grandma and granddad. And that really broke my heart, you know, because there is no guarantee that they will be able to. And I said, Beta, yes, inshallah, one day you will be able to. This is the insecurity that, you know, I live with. But my children being so young at 8 years old, they don't know that any better.
Are you dreading the day where, you know, they start to understand what's going on, maybe 12, 13 years old and then you have to explain to the predicament.
Yeah,
ever
difficult.
Since my children were born, every year we had come back to Malaysia. The only destination apart from Australia was Malaysia. So my children know Malaysia more than they've ever known Australia.
Right.
You know? And their identity is Malaysians. Their friends are Malaysians. So I don't know how they will digest it if they realise one day that, no, they're not one of us, sadly.
It must be really difficult to process that, right? Because your identity, like you said, is Malaysian. How you feel Malaysian, your culture, whatever, your belief system, everything seems so rooted in Malaysia and Malaysian culture.
Right.
But then the government and all are saying that, no, but you're not officially a person of this land.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
On that note, we do need to go for a very quick break now. I'm speaking with Chi Yok Ling of Family Frontiers and Roshina Rafiq, a Malaysian mother who's fighting an uphill battle to confer citizenship on her children. And we are discussing why it's absolutely important for our country to provide equal rights to women with non-Malaysian spouses to confer citizenship on their children. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn with me, Dashran Johan. I'm joined virtually by Chee Yok Ling and Roshina Rafiq of Family Frontiers. Roshina is also a Malaysian mother who's currently fighting an uphill battle to confer citizenship on her children. Yok Ling, could you elaborate further on how COVID-19 has impacted families dealing with this problem?
Yeah, you know, that's a whole host of suffering actually for families who are transnational during COVID, you know, but I will focus on the citizenship aspect. For example, you know, there is a lot more awareness now in recent years among women, but still not everyone is aware that we cannot automatically pass on our citizenship if our kids are born overseas. So like I said, the practice of coming home, if you can, right, to have your babies here has been something that has been one option. Now, that actually depends on many factors. One, whether you can afford to do so. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you may have difficulties in your pregnancy, which means you can't travel. You have maybe a job back in the country outside, yeah? Maybe your husband, you maybe have other kids. So there are many, many practical considerations for even exercising this option of coming home to have your baby. Now, but many women who can and work really hard to do so were planning to come back. Now, with COVID, the borders were closed. The borders closing means the husbands and their children who are non-Malaysians were not allowed to enter the country, right?
Right.
Now, they will not want to come back by themselves because you can't do that, right? So all you had cases where some women had come back earlier and then they were waiting for their husband to join them. Maybe they brought their kids with them, obviously. And then with COVID, the husbands couldn't enter. I mean, Roshina's case is an example where her husband has to wait for a year before the rules will allow them to come back. Mm. So then women who are here then have their babies. And with the uncertainty is the thing that really, really gets you, okay? So we're here talking about just immigration giving you a pass to come in. And they treat you no different, even though you're actually a Malaysian woman with family who are non-Malaysian and trying to reunite those families. And every immigration counter, maybe sometimes the same office in Jalan Duta or wherever, but the different offices will give you different requirements and different rules. Very, very confusing. So you can imagine the anxiety. So many women who came back to have their babies because of citizenship then get separated for months and months without any certainty. Some of them went through postnatal depression. Some, there were a lot of stress. Now, some women came back because they had parents who were ill. Not because they wanted to give birth to a child, but because their parents were ill, they had to come up together with their parents, so they brought their younger children back. Or the children are studying overseas and will come back later with the father. Mm-hmm. And then all these families got separated. And we have many cases where some of the women gave up, took their babies and their children, and they left the country to go back to really dangerous places, okay, whether it's the UK, the US, or India, or wherever, where the COVID is really, really rampant. We are one of the safer countries so far. You know, where right. COVID management is concerned. So this inequality in our constitutional right meant that we were forcing many of the Malaysian women and their little children to leave the country into COVID land. Yeah. We've even had cases where you know, immigration will tell a mother, hey, your child who is 6 years old, this child has to leave. The child is 6 years old. The child has to leave. I mean, you know, her visa has run out. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely ridiculous, right? And the law as it stands is also a violation of international human rights standards, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I think like international human rights standards are clear that you are not allowed gender-based discrimination of any sort. Yeah. And there are certain things like, for example, the UN Convention on the Rights of a Child, the elimination of all forms of discrimination against women. These are all sort of acts that Malaysia is part of.
That's right. Okay, these two very important international treaties, yeah?
Yes.
And governments can choose to join or not to join, okay? And Malaysia chose to join, which is great. We all welcomed it because there were huge campaigns for many, many years, you know, among the women's rights groups and all, you know, to get the government of back then to join. So the government joined the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, called CEDAW in short form, back in 1995. Right, 1995, right? And CEDAW has a very specific clause which says that the state parties, Malaysia in this case is one of them, shall grant women equal rights with men with respect to the nationality of their children, specifically about nationality.
Right.
Now, what happened was when Malaysia joined, the Malaysian government at that time, because of this discrimination in our constitution, so rather than to change the constitution, just to change the word father to parent, okay, then there will be no issue. Instead of changing that one word, they actually left it as it is, and put in what we call a reservation. So when a government joins an international treaty or agreement, you can say, well, for this one section or that one clause, I have a reservation. That means I'm not going to implement that one. So Malaysia put in a reservation on the nationality equality guarantee in CEDAW. Okay. So now so what happened was in 2001, again, you know, after many years of a lot of advocacy by women's rights groups in this country, the constitution of Malaysia was changed. And this is very important. It's not just about the international law. We have implemented in our fundamental liberty section of our constitution in Malaysia, right? Mm-hmm. So there is in the beginning of the constitution one section called fundamental liberties. This is the foundation of our rights.
Right.
And it says in Article 8 that there shall be equality and no discrimination. So in 2001, yeah, because we joined CEDAW, etc., so the constitution was changed and the word gender, no discrimination based on gender, the word gender was included. Very, very good. That's our obligation to guarantee women equal rights. But they did not change the word father in the citizenship schedule. While some people say it's contradictory, others say, well, you know, the constitution doesn't give, no country in the world gives you absolute rights, yeah, because it's subject to, you know, security and this and that and all that.
Okay.
So it's a question of interpretation. So, which is why we have taken this case to the constitutional, for constitutional declaration. We say, look, what is the logic? If your fundamental liberties is your starting point, and that's the way to interpret fundamental liberties in any constitution, right?
Yep.
Then you come to the nationality, Article 14. And there it says by operation of law, it doesn't mention men or father. It says by operation of law, right? Mm-hmm. Then you go to a schedule, which is further down in the back of the constitution, and they put father as the one that will pass citizenship.
Yeah.
By law. Now, so our argument is that we have to interpret our constitution in a logical way. What is the intent? The intent is equality, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we changed in 2001 because when we started, this is the colonial independence, you know, constitution back in the day. But we, in 2001, the government, this country, said we will recognize equality and we don't discriminate based on gender. That's a big, big step forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you should be consistent. So our argument is that this inconsistency, right, can be interpreted to be consistent because what is your starting point? Article 8. Then Article 14 and its schedule has to be in alignment, and that's how it should be read.
You see, here's the thing. From my perspective, this seems like a very, very straightforward issue. For the sake of the children's safety and well-being, in the name of equality, mothers should be allowed to confer their citizenship to their kids. This doesn't sound very complex. It's something that cuts across all races and all religions. So what's preventing the various governments that we've had over the years to amend the constitution?
We ask the same question, don't we, Roshna? I mean, you're right. I mean, we joined, like you said, you know, you also mentioned the Convention on the Rights of the Child, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Malaysia joined both these treaties, the women's rights thing and the child's rights thing at the same time in the same year. And that one also has very clear provision about the child having a right to nationality, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, there was a reservation to keep this discrimination. We would like to know why. Because as Roshna says, when you get a rejection, when you apply under Article 15, right? Then you try, okay, fine, I cannot get it by operation of law. I will apply, you know, for registration, you know, and you vote for all the forms, you do everything that you are supposed to do according to the procedure. You get rejected, you're not given a reason why, okay? So for the same reason, we don't know why this change, which is very straightforward and logical, hasn't happened, right? So during the Pakatan time, the campaign for equal rights and then the foreign spouse support group, you know, so many people who worked so hard, they actually got a group of mothers, went to see half the cabinet because there'll be a lot of women in the cabinet. It's not just a women issue. We've been told sometimes, you know, go and find a women, you know, a minister or influential woman to come and support and your campaign. It is a family issue, right? So every man should also be shouting as loud, if not louder, than the women for
Definitely.
This issue. So we thought we would have
that's right.
Opportunity because we had. Yeah, we had quite a number of ministers, and even one Aziza, who was minister of you know, women and family and all that at that time, she also came up. And of course, there may be issues, and we want to know why. If there are issues, tell us what it is, okay? I think Lim Kit Siang said, you know, if this issue for amendment of the constitution comes up to the parliament, every member of DAP says will vote for the amendment. Now, to amend the constitution, you need 2/3 majority in Dewan Rakyat and also in the Senate. 2/3, right? It's a family issue.
Right.
So we want to know, and we will ask that. We want every member of parliament, I don't care what party you are from, is it just a simple yes or no? Do you support that we have equal rights to pass nationality to our children? You know, in this country, there is a recognition that women play a very important role in contributing to society, to the economy. And we have many professional women. We have many women who are very well educated, who also choose to be taking care of their families, and we struggle to do both most of the time. And we are contributing. We are celebrated, you know, women this and women that. But why on this point about passing nationality to our children, we don't get it. Is it male chauvinism or patriarchy? Maybe, I don't know.
Yes, I would like to add to that too, in terms of reference to my husband and I. Several years ago, I actually was accepted by Talent Corp to, you know, upon assessing my qualifications and experience and all that. Mm-hmm. They had accepted me to come back to Malaysia. And the condition was that my husband and my children would be given PR. And at that point in time, I couldn't come back for, you know, other personal reasons. Mm-hmm. And but I thought, okay, if Talent Corp can accept me and bring me back to Malaysia, there shouldn't be an issue when I, you know, actually go back one day to apply for my kid's citizenship and just stay on.
Yep.
Because Talent Corp was willing to give PR within 6 months. And my husband is also, you know, very highly qualified. He's a fellow, a doctor in medicine. So, you know, what I'm trying to say is that, you know, we are bringing talent back to the country. And when he lives here and works here, like what I'm doing right now, we are contributing back to the country. We are contributing back to the economy. We will purchase properties. We will, you know, spend here. And, you know, so the way I see it, it's a positive thing for the country to have us come back. So exactly. I don't understand why the discrimination.
But Roshina, you see, there are some who argue that if you confer nationality on your children, it's a threat to national security.
Yes, that was right.
Yes,
the deputy minister who...
I did argue that, you know, and I'm just surprised funny side of all of this, Darshan, is that I'm paying top dollar for my children to be studying in a, you know, in an international school because I intend to make them, you know, a threat to society one day.
That was actually a reply from the Deputy Home Minister, right?
That's
this
right.
National
yes,
security
correct.
Issue.
Yes.
And obviously, when he made that statement, it just triggered so much outrage, you know. And we are quite happy because now we've got so many more supporters, including from lawyers associations, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So, who say, you know, what's wrong? Why can't we do this equal rights thing?
Yeah.
And we have not heard anything since, you know, in terms of clarification or what you may, you know, whatever they saw that. So it's crazy. So does it mean, as Roshna was saying, you know, does it mean that also then if it happens to be the other way around and it's a man, then there's no security threat? What is the logic, right? So that I would just dismiss that because I think that is an embarrassment to the government. What they do say, I mean, you know, every time the mothers, the anxious families write to find out what is the status of my application, you know, you might get a kind of standard reply. Oh, you know, citizenship is a very serious matter and it takes a long time to investigate and I don't know what they're investigating and assessing. And then they say something like, you know, sometimes they also say these are security things, blah, blah, blah. So we have to investigate, make sure that whoever's applying, you know, this is when they tell us, don't worry, you can always go the route of Article 15. The other option, we always told that you have the other option. Mm. Apply under Article 15. And that's where they say, well, that could be anybody, right? So they're not treating us any different, you know? And there they will just, they don't give you reasons. They just don't.
The understanding here, Darshan, is that when you put in your first application, you'll only hear back after 4 years. And then after that, it should be within 2 years. And there was an amendment made somewhere a couple of years ago saying that they'll respond within a year. Now, in my case and in many other women's cases, it's, you know, our second or third applications have been in for more than 3 years and we've not heard anything. I just hope for a more pleasant outcome in the near future.
Yeah, speaking of hoping for more pleasant outcomes, Roshina, as a Malaysian, what is your wish list moving forward? What are some of the changes you hope to see?
I so wish for my kids, you know, if while processing their citizenship application, I hope that they can at least give my kids PR. Why do I feel that Malaysian women who marry foreign men are made to suffer throughout this process. I mean, why am I made to go through this process? Is it simply because I chose to return back home to look after my elderly parents? And what will happen to my parents if my kids and I can't stay here? You know, or what about divorce cases, like I mentioned before? So my first wish list is that while waiting out for this outcome of citizenship, which could take years and years, you know, at least grant my children PR. Right. So that we can live here with the peace of mind, you know, not, without any worry. Like just a couple of weeks ago when I renewed my kids' student visa, I was worried whether it'll be renewed or not. You know, the anxiety that you go through. Mm-hmm. You know, other countries such in the Middle East, I lived there for a couple of years still working. They give us resident pass permits for 5 years on the spot. You know, and which gives me and my family, my children, access to healthcare and schooling, which, you know, I'm hoping a PR would at least put me at ease so my children, my family can have access to basic rights while we wait out our citizenship application.
Right. And Yok Ling, what are some of the recommendations Family Frontiers have for the Malaysian government?
Right. Well, I think you need to have a separate program on immigration and spouses, you know, which I totally support. I totally support what Roshina just said. Right. I know from the point of view of Family Frontiers, for us, we feel that the first ask and wish list is to get our constitutional right of equal citizenship entrenched in practice. Right, and to have the clarity. And we look forward to an enlightened, independent judiciary that will actually put this injustice to right. That's our fundamental ask. And meanwhile, we feel that it's very important that as an interim measure, just put all these families out of their torture, give them PR, right? Give them PR. These are children, you know, and that's very, very important. I personally feel very strongly about this also because, you know, my children are, you know, they're adults, they are 23 and 24, mm-hmm. and they're living overseas, they're working, they went to study overseas, and because of COVID, they couldn't come back because they're not Malaysian citizens, right?
Right.
So they are no different from any other foreigner. And foreigners who are still allowed to come in on special permission, you know, can still come in. But children to come back because they want to see their parents or their grandparents are not allowed to, okay? So unless I'm dying, maybe they may allow them to come back.
That's really sad.
So it's really sad. So we have had Zoom Christmases, Zoom Christmas cards, and it's the first time, even for my children, first time we're not together, you know, over at the end of the year to greet the new year. So for us in Family Frontiers, these are very important. And the citizenship is the core part of our work. But really, link up to that is the rights of family, you know, foreign spouses. And this applies to even Malaysian men with women who are non-citizens. And COVID has actually wrought such suffering, just a lack of coordination among different agencies and all kinds of other problems. And the children, I think in the end, the children, many of the little ones may be undergoing lots of, you know, uncertainty and fear. They may not even be able to say it, right? That's Can you imagine if your child is not a citizen, you can get, as a mother, you can have this Anak Warga Negara social pass every 6 months, all right?
Okay.
And then when the child reaches six years old, they say, well, now you're school going, then you have to go and get a student visa, which is what Roshina was talking about.
Yep.
So honestly, you know, six months for children and the spouses. And then the spouses are not allowed if they get a long-term. So long-term pass is actually 6 months, another 6 months, and maybe 1 year. And then you're not supposed to work for a certain period. I mean, what nonsense. I mean, I don't know what logic. Maybe these are old rules, right? When foreign spouses were women and the men were the ones who married, you know, non-Malaysians. But, you know, we're having a 19th century constitution and practice in many ways. And when we bring some parts of our constitution to the 21st century, like Article 8 and equality, let's bring that 19th century nationality discrimination law into the 21st century as well. And that's our number one ask as Family Frontiers.
All right. On that note, Roshina, Yok Ling, I really hope y'all win the constitutional challenge in the High Court. I hope they make the amendments in the Constitution. Thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your insights and stories.
Thank you.
I've been having a chat with Chi Yok Ling and Roshina Rafiq of Family Frontiers on Malaysia's discriminatory law that denies women with foreign spouses the right to confer nationality on their children if their child was born overseas. So if you missed any part of this conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or better yet, subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. Once again, I'm Darshan Johan, and you've been listening to Live and Learn on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.